times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff about that. There's so much that is not happening now.
Visualize what we're talking about.
And then so much of the history we have is because
so long we're on that train.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. How is Joe today?
Good. How you doing, Doug?
You got your espresso.
I do. That was in the nick of time, like
it
30
was.
Seconds.
You're going to be sprinting by the time we're done here.
A lot of coffee. Like a lot.
I've only had one cup, but I feel pretty good. So.
Good.
How's the fam? Everything
good.
Going well?
Yeah,
how's Deb's shop?
She's loving it.
Yeah, she's having fun.
Yeah. Well, the best part for her is she goes out now. She's like thrifting and going to, you know, store. Collectible shops and whatever. Yeah. She likes that part better than the selling part.
Sure. But you help with a lot of the selling stuff.
Yeah.
Which is good. And spring seems to have sprung. I mean, it faked us out for a little bit. Then we got snow, but now it's like,
well, when I bring Gus to my driveway, spring has begun.
Ah, so is Gus.
Gus is in the driveway.
In position, ready to
in
go.
In position.
Where's
ready
the
to
first
go.
Spot?
Don't know yet. I think it's going to be Florida. Well, no, I think it's going to be Tennessee. I think we're going to do some climbing.
Smoky Mountains, some, like Gatlinburg. Yeah.
Out in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, that's going to be
nice. That's fun. Have you ever been in that area?
I have not. We haven't done like the state parks or the real wilderness side of Tennessee. So this is.
Well, they have that. I forget the name of the town, but they have that one town that's a whole theme park there. Everybody swears. I think it's Gatlinburg. Everybody swears by it. It's such a fun spot for the kids to go. And yeah, it's one of those areas that our broader family was talking about. Like, oh, if we rented a cabin or something, that would be the spot to go if we didn't go to the beach. I'm like, I'd rather go to the beach.
Especially now, like the warm weather and the sunshine and the sand. That's really what's
vitamin D and vitamin C.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. But Graham had his birthday this weekend. We got to celebrate that. It was a lot of fun. He was telling everybody it was his birthday, and we had somebody come over to the house Sunday, and they were walking up the driveway. They just gotten out of their car, and in their hand they were holding a card, and Graham pushes the door up and goes, "That a birthday note for me?"
I love him.
Very direct. He very much enjoyed getting his gifts, and you know, was telling everybody. He would go down the whole list and how much money he got, and him and Ben are pooling their money together. I was like, for what? He goes, I don't know, but we have more together than we do separate, so we're pooling our money. I'm like, okay, buddy.
Very interesting.
So I don't know what he's going to get, but you know, I think together they've got like $40. So they're
danger, Will Rogers. Danger.
Yeah, yeah. Probably be like a bucket of candy or something.
Probably.
So, but yeah, love celebrating my kids, and it was a lot of fun. We got to have his birthday party, and then did a little family deal. So it was good.
Sweet.
Well, I want to jump in. I know we haven't done an episode like this in a while. I want to talk law of attraction stuff. I want to get into maybe we can do a little review for some of our folks that you know, aren't necessarily on board with that, and even for some of the critics. So define law of attraction, and then let's talk about some examples recently maybe in our lives that we saw an example of law of attraction.
Okay, so the first thing that I usually describe this when I'm taking somebody new is I'm thinking like you have the firewood and you have the stove, right? You want heat, right? And most of us in a position are like, as soon as we get the heat, we'll give you the wood, right? Mm-hmm. But in reality, it is you have to put the wood in first and then you get the heat afterwards. So you have to start positioning yourself for the things you want, even though you can't see them and taste them and feel them and be around them. A good example, like if you were welcoming some new money into your life, right? Let's just say $10,000 was coming through the door. Like in your mind, picture what you would start doing if you had the $10,000, right? You would make room for it. You'd start organizing it. You'd have plans for it and whatever. And then most people are like, well, I'll start doing that once I see the money. And that's where the law of attraction comes in. So I suggest that you start doing that stuff right now. And that's what actually brings the money to you and brings the health to you and brings all those other things to
dress
you.
Like the job you want to have,
exactly
that kind
right.
of mentality. Absolutely. I love the meme that goes along with that, where people say, you know, they always say dress like the job you want to have. What does an eccentric billionaire wear?
Right.
And it's like some guy in his pajamas with, you know, slippers on or whatever. But, you know, realistically, you know, law of attraction isn't hocus pocus, right?
No,
some people make it that way. And I know there are accounts out there that make it kind of, you know, good vibes, and it feels a little new agey spiritual. But realistically, what we're talking about is putting faith into practice.
Yes.
And so you have a goal, you want to achieve something, you have a target in mind. I think of a personal example for you that we're watching come to pass. You wanted to be a public speaker yes. that got invited to do lectures and leadership stuff and, right. and all kinds of stuff in business. And you've had little small things here and there, but you've positioned yourself over the years now, and you've gone to TEDx. I think you're even on the TEDx board or were right. at one point, and you run the media for that, and you're positioning yourself in all the spots so that when the invitations come, you're prepared for them.
Right.
And you got your first invitation first to go
yeah,
into
two of them actually, two. Right back to back. So
and so walk through that. So when okay. did you decide I want to be a public speaker? I have stuff to offer businesses, well, etc.
I would say it, but I wouldn't do it. Like I'm guilty of all of this, just like sure, anybody yeah, else yeah. is. So in the back of my mind, it's something like I'd really like to do that if that, you know, visited me one day. But it's when you decide that you're going to start. That's what's going to happen. That's when you start doing the things that say, "Hey, I got to be discoverable. Like I got to if this is going to rain."
I right? saw that post on your Facebook.
Yeah, that's exactly good. Where it was. Anyways, if it's going to rain, I want to be in it, and it could be peripherally, it could be right in the midst of it, wherever I feel most comfortable being. And then I ask myself questions like, if a person that wanted to be a public speaker, what would they be doing today? And am I doing that? Would a public speaker be watching Netflix complaining about it, or would they be practicing something in front of a mirror or with a microphone in hand or in front of a camera?
Yep. No, 100%. So when did you make the decision? So like, obviously you kind of had like, oh, it'd be nice if it happened, but when's the day that you were like, this is going to happen? Do you have that?
Yeah,
picture?
It was March 17th of 2021.
Okay.
About a year ago, almost a year ago to the day. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Look at what we're talking about. It's like the Lord knew. And so you made that decision, and yes. then what tweaked in your life to position you for what you have now? Because you've talked about it for a while, but you're saying March 17th last year, you said, I'm going to be a public speaker. I'm going to go into businesses. I'm going to have these opportunities.
So the minute that I did that, I started registering myself as a public speaker, right? Okay. I wasn't a public speaker, mm-hmm. but I was registering myself as a public speaker, almost like Youngstown Studio plaque on the door mm-hmm. on an office that wasn't yet Youngstown Studio. So then when I was going through some of these forms, it was asking me questions that I truly didn't have an answer for. Like, you know, where are your headshots and what have you done before? And I was like, oh, if I got to answer this question, I got to go do some stuff before. So then it put me on command that I got to go do something. I was like, well, how do I get hired to do mm-hmm. something? If whatever, like, you don't need to be hired. You have a freaking studio back there. Go back there, yep. record as if you're on stage, right?
Yep.
And give some presentation. So I started doing all the things that an agent would want, that a theater would want, that some kind of organization that would want to hire me would want. And then I started publishing that out to the same people. And then because it was in my brain, it started doing like, I'm going to look for a blue car deal. Then I started looking for things in me that were not public speaker-like. And I started making those little changes. So it took me almost a year to evolve into someone who fit in that little mold, because I didn't when I decided to do it at all. Like, it was so rough. I mean, I knew how to speak, but that wasn't like somebody's going to seek me just sure. because I go on the radio sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So you do those couple of things. And then what do you feel was the thing that triggered the first opportunity?
I think what happens, and it's all over the place, where you get sort of like a stroke of an opportunity that you don't deserve. Like, it's that mm-hmm. magical one that you're like, whoa, where'd that one come from? Right. Yeah. And you have two choices. You can either say, well, that wasn't what I was picturing, and cast it off because you're not on stage in front of 10,000 people. You're on mm-hmm. stage in front of three people. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you recognize that is your introduction to get what you want, and you perform like it is 10,000, yep. that's when the crack of the bat happens and it starts really unwinding.
So the first one was kind of a smaller
Very
opportunity
small, in front of small people, one or two. It was one or two people. Okay. So it wasn't like even yeah. 100 people.
Yep.
But I had to, I was challenged to either get kind of like angry about that uh-huh. and a little like, I'm not going to do it if it's less than 10. But I felt like in the moment that the blood drained out of my face and I was a little embarrassed and I, you know, maybe I'm not cut out for this and all those fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I'm like, you know what? F you, bud. That's exactly how it went down.
Yeah, it reminds me of John Acuff, who's a serial entrepreneur, author, and he shared a picture a couple years ago, and it was his first ever, like, basically introducing himself as, you know, a speaker, author, whatever, and he rented out this room, he did all these invites, and two people showed yep. up. And
that's the way it happens.
And
right
he almost wanted to quit, and he shared this whole story about just, hey, persevere. Like, everybody looks at him now, and he sold millions of books and he speaks at businesses and stuff all over the place, very similar to, you know, what you're talking about doing. And you know, he was this, you know, kind of a college Christian blogger that, you know, spun his stuff into some books. But in the beginning, nobody knew who he was. Nobody was showing up for his talks. There wasn't any of that stuff. And I think a lot of times in the beginning, everybody thinks like, oh, well, if I put my mind to this, law of attraction says I'm gonna have this. And so, you know, I just have to think about it. And now I'm going to speak in front of millions of people. Nope. And there's a whole process to this. And it's literally putting your faith into action step by step. So I have this belief that, like Joe, I'm going to be a speaker, and therefore I'm going to start prepping and preparing myself as if I'm going to get calls and opportunities and these things are going to come my way.
The demystifying about it is if you get to know the both parts of your brain, you have the conscious brain who, you know, you spend most of your time there thinking and imagining and whatever. Your subconscious brain doesn't really give you occupancy there. There's so much more going on than the subconscious than the conscious. But when you do this, you're programming your subconscious to do stuff that you don't even ever get to realize. That's like the blue car stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And but the part that you're getting into is the fear, uncertainty and doubt. Yes. Once you make the declaration, I'm going to be a speaker.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, all of that floods in. I've had plenty of those opportunities where I'm like, I don't belong in this room. Like, what am I doing here? There's got to be somebody better at this. Like, why did they pick me for whatever role or whatever thing? And, you know, I find myself in that space often, and I've learned to, instead of running to the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, that FUD that we have talked about multiple times on the show, to take that, to look it in the face and be like, I'm here because I positioned myself to be here. I believe that I belong here. You know, God's given me the talent, skill, and ability, and I've worked the talent, skill, and ability to position myself for where I'm at.
You know, it's easy, too, that when you watch this theme play out in a million different ways, like you selling your house, it was the same deal.
Yeah.
You ask for it, you get it, you dread it, you conquer it, and then you move on. But when you watch going through the process, then you lose a little fear and respect for the whole process because it happens so often. You're like, I know what's going to happen next, and I know what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah, no, and anytime you know, you're setting out to conquer something, whether it's public speaking, selling a house, you know, you chart some sort of goal, and then you get to the end and you're like, all right, in the beginning, I was building mountains and obstacles for me to climb over. Like, that's never going to happen. And this, you know, oh, this is going to be impossible. And then you get to the end, and you're like, well, that was kind of dumb for me to think that. And you, if you work backwards and deconstruct, then the next time you can go, when that you start building the mountain, you go, no, I did this last time. I built all these mountains and none of them happened. You know, they're mental, you know, hurdles to overcome. I've done that with people. I've done that with vision stuff in the church where, hey, we've set this up. This is our target. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wow, it's probably not going to happen because we got this going on. And, you know, we have, you know, the whatever. And you start running into actual small little obstacles that really aren't a big deal, but then they become big because you really magnify and focus on them. How does Joe combat fear, uncertainty, and doubt? Do you have a different strategy for each of them?
The classification. So let's get into the attraction part of law of attraction. And you probably recognize this, like when you walk into a room and you kind of get a feeling about people or things or whatever, you get that sensory about what's going on around you, right? Mm-hmm. You get a happy person that's bubbly and loud, and you get the sad person who's mad and angry, right? And so like, you will gravitate towards things that are sort of like, you know, calibrated to your personality. So if you wanted to, you can do this test where you can go in up to a person and give them a compliment just out of the blue, and you watch what happens to them.
Yeah.
You know, their being. So the attracting part is that if you create an environment that's like negative and rigid, you attract more negative and rigid people because that's the vibrations that you put out towards the world. And those people gravitate towards because they like it. They're interested in that. They want more of it. So go pick a fight on Facebook. It would take you 32 seconds to know what you would have to say, right?
Yeah.
But it works the opposite too. A lot of times we first have to pair off the negative side. So when you get yourself saying, I can't do something, or it's going to be hard, or somebody's not going to like it, those are all the vibrations that you're putting. You think you're being an observer by pointing out obvious truths that are right now, but you attract that stuff to it because you're like, subconscious, look out for negative people and make me gravitate towards them and put me close to them. And so, but you can, as soon as you say, oh, wait, as soon as I stop doing that, now there's a vacuum. Now you can start doing the other side, which is I want to attract people who are supportive, What would I do to do track to support? I wouldn't complain and say it's stupid and say it's scary and whatever. I would say something like sharing this with me and I want the best for you. And, you know, say more positive types of things.
No, absolutely. I think in the on the attraction end of things, I think of a phrase that I've said a bunch. We talk about the faith side of things, and faith really, there's a scripture for it, Joe, and we haven't done this in a while. Hit that button.
Yes.
In the book of Hebrews, Hebrews 11 verse 1 says that faith is the substance of things hoped for. And I love that. Faith has a substance to it. There's something tangible about it. And it's hoped for, and it's being, the second part says it's certain of what you cannot see. There's a certainty to a future outcome that you don't necessarily have. So there's substance and there's certainty. And when I think about the law of attraction side of things, there's substance to it. What's the goal that I want to set? It's tangible. It's something, you know, some sort of achievement I want to achieve. And then there's a certainty to it. I know I'm going to receive that.
Right.
Maybe 6 months, it may be 10 years, but I know I'm convinced of it. And then I'm going to, when I'm convinced, my life lines up and follows suit. So I start preparing to public speak. I start doing those sort of things. But then inevitably, as you start making those changes, that fear, uncertainty, and doubt will come to visit. But it's faith in the beginning. And a lot of people struggle with that. If someone's struggling with the faith muscle, how can they expand that? You know, you talked about the, you know, if you talk positively, you're going to pull positive. You talk negatively, you're going to pull negative. You know, like attracts like. I totally agree with that. But some people out there, they're kind of jaded. So how do we get their faith muscle pumping again? What's an exercise or something they can do?
So words are what we use as the practice to kind of like exercise your way into that. But in the beginning, you're going to just be an observer where you're going to argue that, you know, it's not happening. Like one of my first classes or, you know, motivational talks that I gave was before one freaking person. It was about becoming a millionaire. And that one person, right, told me that he wasn't going to listen to me because I wasn't a millionaire. Right. And so the words, like I would say, well, he's right. I mean, you're not a millionaire. How dare you talk about being a millionaire in front of it? Right.
Yeah.
But then my words were up here telling me that, but my actions were down here just doing it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so like when the disconnect, like your words kept saying, oh yeah, you're not going to do it. You're not going to finish this race. You're not good enough, whatever. But if you keep running towards it, your words like, all right, screw you. I'm done trying to dissuade you from doing what you're doing. So it's almost taking a lot of pressure off the opinion of yourself and the opinion of other people and get stubborn in the action and say, well, the list says I'm going to do it. Even though I don't feel good about doing it, I'm going to keep pressing forward. And the weight of those words help or keep, you know, eroding a little bit more. And, you know, someone will come up to you, someone who loves you and says, you know what, I know you want to be a musician, but musicians don't make a lot of money. So you won't either. Say, you know what, I love you, mom and dad, but guess what I'm doing tomorrow? I'm going to play on stage.
Yeah.
Right. And then those people, they start backing off that because they're not saving you. They're hurting your feelings and it's not doing any good.
Yeah. There's definitely a perseverance element to faith that you have to have. You know, you can say, oh, I want to be whatever. But if you're not willing to persevere through the trials, through and you brought up people, the people that come alongside you are huge. I just was catching some of the Insta stories yesterday, I think, or Sunday. Jesse Itzler did an Ultraman race. This is nuts. It's 3 days and it's like a 60 mile like open swim or something crazy like that. It's a 180 mile bike ride and a 54 mile marathon back to back to back days. And he had a whole team of people because he had to eat along the way. So they were like literally when he's riding with the bike, he would do a pit stop every hour and fuel up and then go again. And then, but he had a whole team there with him. He had guys that were able to, they were allowed pacers for certain parts of the race that were able to come in and run with him. The swimming was kind of wild because they actually had to call off a portion of the race because there were so many, the waves and wind were just real nasty for it. But watching that, like he had to persevere through that. There were times where he did not want to keep going and the blisters and all the stuff that goes into a marathon race like that. Some people are trying to use their faith in a sprint. But the good stuff comes in the marathons, comes in the, it takes time, 1 yard at a time, one step at a time. How do you tether somebody who's passionate and believes, but just needs a dose of patience?
All right. So you've known me a long time, right? And of all of my, I've done hundreds of ventures in probably the last 5 or 10 years, and you've watched pretty much all of them go down. My success rate is about 25% on those ventures, right? And but you being super close to me doesn't feel like I have a 75% failure rate, does it?
No. Right?
So if you can stand close to someone who fails a lot for a living, you can see like, well, okay, you're just from without me telling you, how would you think that I pull that off, that you would get the sense that it's a lot higher of a success rate than it actually is?
That's a great question. I think it's two things. I think one of it is framing and perception. The way you see quote unquote a loss or a failure, it's not the way most people see a loss or a failure. It's why for some people, you know, a failure is detrimental. They get paralyzed by it. For you, you're just like, next thing, you know, this didn't pan out the way that I wanted to, but it was a great opportunity. I met this person, and it's always on the positive swing. So your perspective and framing even take losses and make them feel like wins. And I think the second thing is, you always have so many irons in the fire that if you have to pull one out, it's like, well, I still have 10 more in there, and you have 10 other, you know, viable good ones in there. So, all right, yeah, we have to pull this one out. It's not worth it anymore. We're going to keep going with these. And so I think those two things make it appear that you have a 75% success rate rather than a fail rate.
So when I'm critiquing someone or correcting them, the ratio is that I make sure that if I have anything negative to say, that I give the least amount of energy and effort into the negative, and I over accentuate the positive. And so I got used to telling you 75% of the time we're talking and how much I love you and how much you're doing a good job. And I sprinkle on the stuff I need to change, but it's all in the batter somewhere else. So if you come home and you had a day that you had a five hour work day, and 4 hours went perfect and 1 hour didn't, right? Mm-hmm. So right now you're at a 20% of the bad part. Now you're only allowed to give the bad part equal energy that it actually occurred. So I have to give 80% to the good stuff that happened. So that 25% just doesn't give enough energy. It doesn't give a lot of attention. It's still there. I'm not like totally ignoring it. You just don't hear a lot about it because it I don't magnify it.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that sentiment. You know, I know for me, when I've set some goals and we've persevered through some things, and you know, I love coming to the end of that, because the end is so rewarding. For sure. Like when you get your speaking engagement, stuff starts taking off. I find it so amusing right now at you know, at 37, how, you know, people come up and be like, man, like, you know, how did you do this? You're so successful at this, you know, love what you're doing with the podcast, the church is so cool, or whatever. And getting those compliments is cool. But I said this in my sermon on Sunday, like, you know, everybody looks at it and like, man, you know, this church is so great. And I'm like, yeah, but like, you didn't see the last 8.5 years. Right. Like, you didn't see the people that came and left. You didn't see the people that said, yeah, this isn't going to work. Like,
all right, I got a question
for you.
All right. So you're let's just say you're selling somebody your car.
Okay.
They're buying it, and there's a list of things. There's some stuff that's wrong with it that you know about, and there's some huge benefits to it. There's some really great stuff on that list that you can't wait till the person that gets your car gets to experience. Do you start with the problems first and get those out of the way, and then hurry up and scoot down to the good parts? Or you do it vice versa, where you start out with the good parts because they don't really hear the bad parts anyway, and you wait till the very end when you don't have to, or you can't delay it anymore, give them the bad parts at the end?
That's a good question. So because my relational skill set, I would probably read the person. And if the person, a little more down to earth, you know, just connected, they would probably appreciate the honesty up front. And I would, hey, here are the three or four things that, you know, you're going to have to fix and aren't great, but let me tell you about these awesome things over here. So for me, it would depend on the person, you know? So if you get the person that comes in there, that just has that, I don't know, I just can read that person and go, all right, you know what? They're going to find me more credible if I share the honest stuff up front. So let's just lay the facts out. They're going to go, oh, this guy's not trying to pull one over on me. So, okay. You know, far more likely to buy. And then vice versa, if you're, you know, selling to somebody that's coming in, that's really pumped about the car and all that stuff, and they're coming in amped, I'm going to match that energy and say, hey, you know, here are the 19 things. I love this about the car. You're going to love this when you drive it, you know, and take them for a test ride and everything else. And then when you come back, a couple things you need to be aware of too. I'm not going to pull one over on you, but this, this, and this are going to need to be, oh, that's fine, because I love whatever. So to me, I think it's a person question.
Okay.
It really boils down to personality.
So I'll change the metaphor on you to kind of give you the Joe's practice here. So I wake up in the morning and I list out all of the challenges for the day. Mm-hmm. And when I go to bed, I leave going to bed with all of the dreams, hopes, and goals. Mm. So when the time after you fall asleep, when you're programming your subconscious, you want to leave it not with all the problems and challenges you have to face when you can't do anything about it, but the goals and dreams and hopes will get you excited and programmed. So when you have a conversation, if you start off with the bad and end with the good, you leave that person with the feeling of those hopes and dreams and goals, just like you would your subconscious. So it ends up, you know, no matter what element it is, I try to follow that ratio that if there's anything bad, I'm going to say it right off the get-go, no matter who you are, I don't care how it's, because it's really not about you.
Sure.
Right. I have to tell you about that first to get right off the get-go that I'm sharing with you. And the rest of the part isn't to like offset, mm-hmm. but when you leave me, I don't want you to leave me with a guy that just points out problems with you. I want to be a solutions and a hope and a dreams and goals person.
No, absolutely. I totally get that. And that, in that sense, that makes a ton more sense when you're selling. In my mind, my brain goes to a little different spot, but so with the law of attraction, you know, you end up stating a goal, you end up putting your faith into practice, you start preparing for that thing. I want to be married. So you start getting your house ready for someone to live with you. You know, I want, you know, more money in my bank account. You start making plans and strategies. But ultimately, you're going to have to persevere at some point. And you push through that perseverance, whether you're, you know, fear enters in and you got some insecurities, whether you're uncertain how stuff's going to work out, whether you have some doubts that you can even do that or worthy of that. And then this beautiful thing happens because you get on the other side of that and you get it.
You do.
And some people crumble at that point.
Oh, most
they,
people.
They go, that part. you know, I got it. Like I've watched people in a short period of time, you know, they've prayed and they've gone through like just rough patches in life and they've persevered through hard stuff. And they're like, man, this is just what I want. This is just what I want. And then they get it mm-hmm. like all in a short period of time. And they don't know what to do. They don't know how to
That's
live
why
with
we
it.
Changed the theme. I tell you, like after the first ask that you get it, you get fear, uncertainty and doubt. But when you actually get it, it culminates, it's called dread. And dread is a worse word than fear, uncertainty and doubt. But, and everybody around you like, you just got what you wanted. Like,
yeah.
What is your problem?
Yeah. And I have watched so many people get to that place where their prayer is answered. They get the health stuff that comes through or healing happens, or they get a job they've been praying for or whatever, a relationship works out. And then they're like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, you know, I've watched people in their marriages, you know, be in total shambles, pray, you know, go through counseling, all this stuff. And 2 years later, they're sitting there and they're both really healthy and they've worked through the hard stuff. And they're looking at each other like, I liked you better broken. Like, I don't know what to do with you now that we're both healthy. And it's so fascinating to watch that sometimes answered prayer is worse than unanswered prayer.
Let's deconstruct this a little bit, because this is an often missed portion of law of attraction. So I had a friend that that he did run marathons. Like he was a, you know, hardcore marathon runner, 26 kilometer. I mean, he was a hardcore. And the guy would start about 4 or 5 months ahead of a race. He would train for it, whole thing, right? And I wasn't running for marathons. I was running 5K. So I would wait for him at the finish line and he would cross. And I was thinking high fives and did it and whatever. And he was sad and he didn't like the fact that the race was over because the deal is his whole identity was trapped in the pursuit. And once you hand them the marathon, you don't know what to do with it. You just got something that was so hard and took so much out of you. Not only do you lose your identity in the moment, right? Now what? Like, what is the big question? What's my next move? And what if I could have kicked the event 6 months from now and kept training through it? You chose that one. So let's just say someone's like, hey, here's a July date for Joe to get on stage. And I start my preparation. I'm like, oh, this is almost here. Now I'm getting scared. And now I don't want this really to happen and whatever. And I'm like, please delay this with a snowstorm. Right? That's the kind of
in mentality. July.
But deconstruct, like, why would that happen? What about the law of attraction? Because what happens is you have two sides of this. You can attract positive things to you, and you can attract negative things. And the energies you put in will do either one of those. So if you get somebody who's got addiction problems, right? And they go through the whole thing where they have people paying attention to them when they're at their worst, and they have counseling meetings and they show them attention. All of a sudden you get on the better side of things. Now nobody sits down with you and they don't offer their discussions with you and whatever, right? So now your brain almost wants to go back to a place that you said you'd never go back to, to get the things that were part of the pursuit. You don't actually want to win the race. You want the pursuit of the race.
That's some...
Yeah, for sure.
Preach it. Because you watch this with people in bad relationships, right? They go into the same, they're not necessarily looking for love. They're actually just addicted to the feeling that the person gives them. Right. And so they go back into those cycles. You see it in jobs. You know, some people stay at a job for 2 years and then every 2 years they're changing jobs and they can't figure out why. Right. Well, you're addicted to being the new person at the job and getting all the high five. Like, oh man, you're so much fun. And so, and so you have that. You know, that space that you have to recognize that. And I think too, you know, on the tail end, when you get what you've been praying for, when you get what you've been believing for, when that shows up and the blessing arrives, most people, you know, they've thought about how to get it. They haven't thought about how to live with it. And that, those are two different things. I often tell young couples when I'm doing premarital counseling, like, you're preparing for a wedding. You need to prepare for a marriage. Like, the day's great. You're gonna be married, but you got, God willing, 50 years in front of you together. So like, let's put the foundation blocks in so that you're still married 10 years from now or 15 years from now, not so that the DJ plays your favorite song. Like, yeah, that's cool. And you're going to have a party, but here's the thing. Like, I mean, maybe you do, but do you remember what you ate at your wedding?
Right.
I remember, you know, obviously there's some family there. I remember our wedding song, but you know, beyond that, like, we were married, we went to, you know, our honeymoon. I can only tell you a handful of things about the honeymoon to be realistic.
Right.
And you put so much energy and effort into moments and you forget about, you have this whole lifetime. And I think the same thing's true from a law of attraction standpoint. You know, you put your faith into work, you persevere, you have the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And sometimes over months or years, you pursue this and then it shows up and you're like, I don't know how to live with this.
Right.
I don't know how to manage this. And the best example I can think of is people who win the lottery. Now, I'm not saying they use the first part of law of attraction with it, but they exemplify this last part of the dread is they play the lottery and they win $1 million. You know, they've been living off of $30,000 a year. They have no idea. And that's why so many lottery winners end up being bankrupt because they don't know how to live with the money. They get all excited.
So if you went through the process, mm-hmm. like your house, right? Yep. And dread was the end cap on it. It would be hard for you to ask a big thing again because that was freaking hard. But if you did the law of attraction, how I'm suggesting, and then you take and start preparing for acquiring the thing even before it's on your radar, there's no adrenaline, there's no extra chemicals. Yeah. If you're preparing, like, if I did win $1 million, what logically and reasonably should I do with it? And you're already culturing it into a world and preparing yourself to receive it more than anything else.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's more about your preparation to live with it than it is about actually getting it.
For sure.
We put all the energy into how do I get what I want? And realistically, I think, you know, when we're building a life of faith like this and we're going, hey, I'm putting faith on display, I'm making a declaration, I'm positioning my life to receive the thing that I believe is good and that God wants for me. And then I'm going to overcome, I'm going to persevere, and I'm going to receive it. I think it's in the overcoming space that we learn the tools to live with.
That's exactly right. That's why you do with it, because you're hypothetically going through a situation that if you had something, how would you behave? And if you're not doing those things and you become those things before you have it, and then you're super prepared. And then it's a blessing when it comes in and you do know what to do with it and you don't dread it. It ends up just being, you know, like the wide receiver in the end zone, right? You don't celebrate, because if that means you weren't expecting it, that means you're very unlikely to have it happen again. But if you drop it and say, let's do it again, you're more likely to visit it again because you were totally prepared for it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's another scripture that I actually want to read to you that kind of reminds me of what we're talking about here, and I don't want to mess it up, so I'm going to look it up real quick.
Sure.
I think that for me, when I think of law of attraction, my mind as a pastor goes to, all right, this is me expressing my faith, my belief in God, my prayer. Then I'm going to step into the preparation. And there's two ways, you know, there's a lot of times people go into waiting seasons, and I tell people there's two ways to wait. There's active waiting or passive waiting. Too many people are like, well, I prayed for it. All right, God, show up and give it to me. And it's like, he's not a genie in a lamp. Like, all right, I've asked for that, and I'm continuing to ask for that, and I prepared myself in prayer, so now I need to actively wait, which is the positioning you're talking about.
And those then, quiet voices, those suggestions in your intuition, God will pass that down and make suggestions that you should start doing some things that don't make a whole lot of sense. And the faith is following those things. Even if you don't know what its connecting mechanism is to what you asked for, right, you're drumming up those opportunities. So a lot of what you asked for, you don't have the roads that connect you to those things in the first place, right? And so you have to connect those before you come into possession of what you asked for.
Yeah. So this is the verse I want to read, and this is in Romans 5, and it's talking about faith here and the fact that we're justified by faith. But in, I think it's verse number 3, it says, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering, that going through that fear, uncertainty, and doubt, persevering through suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame. And it goes on from there. But I think for a lot of people, the idea of endurance and perseverance and, having to, use the word sacrifice, not in a negative sense, but sometimes I have to lay something down in order to pick the new thing up. And so you get into that space, you're like, God, I really want that. Can I have that, Lord? And you start expressing yourself in that way. And then as you start preparing for it, you realize, well, if I want that, this can't stay in my life. And some people are like, well, I really like what I have in my life. And it's like, you can't receive something with a closed hand. Like the hand has to be open to receive it. And sometimes when you open your hand, stuff gets taken out of it and people are terrified of that.
Right.
So you get into that space a little bit. What's an example for you personally where you've opened your hand to receive something new and something maybe unexpected got taken out to make room for the new thing?
And I had a big fear about this because I was in Youngstown Computer. I was an operator, but I also was in the practice of doing computer work. And my big fear was all these people that depended on me, that one day I was going to not be the person in the field and I was going to lose touch with that. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then I prayed for bigger enterprises. And what happened was I got taken out of the field and I had so much anxiety about me having that control and being able to take care of those people. And I didn't believe that it could be taken as good care of without me being involved. And so that was a scary one for me.
Yeah. Those challenges, big changes like that, shifting not just new enterprises, but new seasons in current enterprises are always challenging. I know as the, as Bridge of Hope has grown, I'm starting to navigate, all right, if we're a church of this size, I'm going to have to release some of these responsibilities because I really need to do this and this. And I'm like, but they're not going to do it like I do it. Right. And you have that space. And so in order to release some of that stuff, some of the things that, at least for me, that I found out is the more I release that, the more freedom I've had to be me and to step into some new stuff, to come into a podcast, to step into some things that I wouldn't have otherwise, because I would have been busy doing this, and this, right. When, man, there's somebody else that's part of their fear, uncertainty, and doubt. That's part of their thing that they've been believing for. And by me staying in that spot, I'm actually limiting them from receiving what they've been praying for, which is a whole other concept in this, that sometimes you stunt other people's growth by not putting your faith to practice and stepping into everything you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and the starting spot for this is really tricky with people who are going, because we give the sort of like the theory on it, but how our culture has conditioned us that if you try to do a transaction and it doesn't culminate within the next like 30 hours, right? And it's probably not going to happen. It was never good anyhow. So how far in the distance can you gaze and trust that even though it hasn't happened, that it's still going to happen? That's number one. What happens if the suggestion it's not going to happen happens? Will you still be able to believe beyond that obstacle?
Sure.
And then if you have other people reinforcing it, where everybody around you is telling you, so you don't see it happening, right? It doesn't look like it's going to happen. And everybody around you tell you it's not going to happen, right? So how long could you do that? I can persist years. If you told me that I wasn't going to be on stage, I'd probably say, that's your opinion, right?
Yeah.
And I love you and everything, sure. But I think I'm still going to go and do my thing. But that's why it's such a player versus player thing. If I don't have environments that suggest this is going to happen beyond that, and I don't have culture that's patient enough to be able to do that, like who do you get around that can see 1 year, 2 year, three years worth of developments before you get any indication that something's going to happen?
Yeah, it's so interesting. When I started at Bridge of Hope, I had a couple of goals. And one of them was the building was stuck in the 1980s. It had tube TVs everywhere and Pepto-Bismol colored everything and Maud this. And it was just old and dated and stained carpet and runs in the carpet. Just an old, big building, good bones, but it was just old. And so I charted a course, and I remember walking through that building the first time. And even during the interview process, they gave us a 3-hour tour, seeing the things as though they would be. Now, it was 7 years later when we completed the massive renovation. But all along, you know, we tackled this area, and then we tackled this area, and then we did the whole worship center, lobby, bathrooms, all that. And I can remember before the ribbon cutting, you know, I was in the building and I was helping and watching it come to pass. But when it was done and we were cutting the ribbon, like I had a good like moment of like cry in my office, like I saw this 7 years ago. And we did everything we could. Not only that, like, you know, I look at we get a lot of compliments on our worship and, you know, where the worship was 8 years ago when I got here to where it is now. Like, I saw that. Now, I don't play an instrument and I can't sing. So I could have no direct impact on that. I just had to put the right people in the right places and give them the right culture and boundaries so that they would succeed. And Pastor Mike's done a great job with that. You know, September will be 5 years we've been together, which is totally wild. It feels like yesterday. Wow. But I look at those things, and that's just 8 years. And I look at people that have been doing stuff for 40 years, and we joke about this all the time that, you know, everybody looks at the 20-year overnight successes and they go, man, you know, you guys are so popular. How'd you get popular? Well, nobody knew who I was for 20 years. Like, you know, I was working my tail off in obscurity, trying to figure things out. I was growing. I was overcoming things in myself. And then, boom, it all clicked all of the sudden. Right. Well, it wasn't all of the sudden. It was, you know, a whole bunch of losses and successes and everything strung together, people coming, people going, money coming in, money coming out, big decisions, learning how to express your faith. Like, all of that plays into, and then we look at it and go, oh, well, you know, they're just, if I had money like that, we'd be able to do that. Or if I had a building like that, I'd be able to do that. And we do that to give ourselves an out. But realistically, if you work the process and give it the time that it needs, it'll come to pass.
Well, the law of attraction is so exacting, and how you celebrated the church renovation, sort of like if you took a dollar and put it in a jar for 365 days, you would get to the end of the year and then say, oh, there's 360. It wouldn't be surprising, right? Because you believed in the math and you did the thing that was required of the 365. But if somebody wasn't, you came along and said, 365, how is that done? Where is that at, right? So it's a different experience.
Yeah,
You trust your gaze to wait for what you believe is the proper math to make something that's certain already happened. You're not going to be like touchdown, you know, spiking the football over something that you knew was going to happen anyway. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very true. And even, you know, we've added a lot of people since we finished the renovation in 2020. And, you know, they come in like, wow, the church is amazing. And they don't even know what it looked like before. They're just appreciating what it is in the moment. So, you know, that stuff for me, you know, and that's a small example. You know, we could, I'm sure, go back and forth and share several kind of war stories. But I think the power in and recognizing the process has helped me go, all right, you know, I just received where I'm at. I don't need to dread, but now I have three more things to believe for. So let's start the process over again. It's almost this never ending cycle.
So if my marathon buddy would have left that marathon to go to the next marathon that was already in, he'd probably be just fine.
Yeah.
Right. But since that was like an end goal that he couldn't even see past that end goal, that's when despair set in.
Yep. No, absolutely. Well, this is a great episode, and I think it's like Law of Attraction 101. And we would love for you leave a comment, send us a message. What are you believing for? What is your faith activating in your life? We'd love to be able to come alongside you, encourage you, pray for you, and see God do some special stuff in your life.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.